The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network. Are you looking for a new and empowering lens through which to view your life and your health? Then register now for Get Healthy with Sound, a weekend workshop with Eileen McCusick, an innovator in the fields of therapeutic sound, electric health, and the human biofield, May 24th to 26th at Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York. Learn easy and accessible techniques to reduce stress, improve focus, and increase energy. Learn more today at eomega.org/thrive.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Welcome to Main Street Vegan, a lively hour with host Victoria Moran, best-selling author and the OG of vegan living for over 40 years. She and her guests have got the goods to help you look and feel amazing, make a difference for animals, and discover the soulful side of the vegan journey. Now, here's Victoria.
You know, there's this collective unconscious. And that means that sometimes when good people are thinking about good things, they're kind of thinking in the same mental neighborhood. So my guest today, I believe, is pretty much in the same mental neighborhood as me, because her handle online and all around and about is Vegan Girl Next Door. Well, I am Main Street Vegan. So, do you kind of get it? We're not zillionaires. We're not movie stars. We're not super chefs. We're regular people who find that being vegan is just about one of the best things on earth. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Main Street Vegan Podcast. I am Victoria Moran. I'm very excited to be introducing you to my guest today. Her actual name, beyond Vegan Girl Next Door, is Christine Mania, and she has just written her first book, Vegan Minded, Becoming a Steward for Animals, People, and the Planet. This is a beautiful book. This is a beautiful book before you even open it, because it has a gorgeous, glorious, wonderful, colorful, animal-filled, happiness-filled visual that for me really encapsulates what being vegan is all about. You know, it's not about suffering. It's not about giving up. It's not about, oh my gosh, I remember how good something was, because you're enjoying so much the good of what you're doing now. So, Vegan Minded, gorgeous book. Now I'll tell you about my guest. Christine Cook Mania has devoted herself to a vegan lifestyle and studying its benefits for human health, environment, and animals since 2005. She was raised in Indiana, has a BA in journalism from Indiana University, and a Master of Arts in Humane Education. She lives in the Pacific Northwest with her husband, two cats, and a dog, all three of whom were, of course, adopted from shelters. Welcome, Christine.
Thank you for having me today, Victoria. It's so nice to be here.
It is wonderful to have you. Your book is just gorgeous. I have it out on my coffee table. And frankly, we're not having a lot of visitors these days, but it's almost like I need to have more visitors so they can see this pretty book. So seriously, and it's great inside too, but I'm crazy about the cover. So let's talk about how a girl from Indiana became the vegan girl next door. Tell us your story.
Sure. So back in 1985, we received a newsletter from PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. And I was, I think, 16 or 17. And, you know, I grew up in Southern Indiana. It was on the border of Kentucky. Not a hotbed for progressiveness in any way, shape, or form. So we got this newsletter, and I may have been the only one who read it in the family. I used to always go get the mail, and it changed my life right then. It made me aware of things I was never aware of, specifically animal cruelty, seeing some cows on factory farms, monkeys in cages, rabbits in cages. So what I remember most is the animal testing that was very prominent in that particular issue of the newsletter, but also factory farming. And so I decided right away I was going to be vegetarian. I'm sure that the newsletter really wanted me to be vegan, and that was what it was presenting to me, but that was way outside my realm of possibilities at the time, but it did set me on a path. And I was the only vegetarian that I knew for many years, and I really wasn't a great vegetarian. I ate a lot of fish, but other than that, I was a good vegetarian. I didn't even know what pescatarian was, people who eat fish and dairy and eggs. And so I just stayed on that path for many years, but it was always in the back of my mind that to be vegan, there was just something that I knew that I was drawn to that, but I didn't have any support. I didn't know anyone. And then in 2004, so this is about 19 years later, I was volunteering at an animal shelter in Chicago, and I was working with one of the directors one night at the Cat Adoption Center, and she was telling me she went to a farm sanctuary conference over the weekend and that she was going to go vegan. And I thought, oh, okay, so now I might know someone. And then a few months later, another volunteer I was talking to brought up dairy and the veal industry and how they're connected. And I thought, okay, now I know two people and I'm friends with them, and I think I can do this too. And so I set a start date for myself. I'm not a decide and do it kind of person. I need some time to reflect. That's probably why I practice yoga. I'm very contemplative. I examine things. And I decided I was going to do this, but I was giving myself 2 months to really prepare. And so I decided on January 1st, 2005, that was the day. And I've been vegan ever since. And like every other vegan I've ever talked to, I wish I would have done it sooner. That's always the case. But it's just been the best way to live for me. I love it. And I love this lifestyle. Yeah. I get to meet people like you.
Well, we do get to meet some dazzling people. That's for sure. Yeah. When you mentioned PETA, it just reminded me that I wanted to share with folks that last night, and I know where people will be hearing this later than when we record it, but last night from when we are recording, I was at a PETA party down on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. And, you know, a lot of that stuff kind of slowed down. I mean, certainly during the pandemic and even after. And there was such a great kind of energetic vegan community here doing all kinds of things. And it's starting to come back. So it's really exciting. So that party last night was for a new PETA podcast that I want to recommend to everybody. It's called Just So You Know, and it is hosted by two young animal activists, Jamie Logan, who has been on this program. You can find that in the archives. And also Justina Adorno, who is an actress. And I just interviewed her for the Main Street Vegan Salon on Unchained TV. So do look out for Just So You Know and Jamie and Justina. So many people having great things. And, you know, PETA has just inspired so many people.
It has. And since I wrote this book, people have, you know, read my story, and so many people have said, oh yeah, I got a PETA newsletter too. And that is it changed lives back in the 80s. That was, you know, that was how we got information. And so it was pretty amazing. And One cool story that was cool to me anyway, after my book came out, I sent some information. I sent a little postcard to Ingrid Newkirk because I wanted to share with her that how she inspired me. And she wrote me a postcard back. So I was so touched that she took the time to do that. So yeah, PETA has made a real impact on my life.
Well, Ingrid is amazing. I mean, I think Ingrid was like AI before we had AI because she has more energy than a regular mortal person and more kindness and creativity and focus for the animals. And I am not at all surprised that she did that. I've got a similar story that when my first husband died back in the 80s, you know, it's very hard ever to lose someone close to you, but to be widowed young, and I had a little girl, and Ingrid wrote the most beautiful card. And even then, she was this giant celebrity. And the idea that she would take the time to do that, and I get the feeling that there's a certain percentage of time each day that she does this individual outreach to individual people. And I can see why PETA followers are so devoted, because mm-hmm. they're devoted back. They're really right. wonderful people. Well, that is such a cool story. I love to know about that card. So I know that for you, as in addition to your PETA feelings and animal rights issues, you have seen the climate change connection for a long time, I think longer than a lot of people. And I know that you're trying to get more people to consider moving in a vegan direction for the climate reason. I find that even though that ought to be what everybody wakes up about, it seems to be the least common motivation for people to go vegan. So can you talk a little bit about where you are with all that?
Sure. Yeah, I agree. It's probably, I always look at being vegan, people come to it for three reasons: the animals, your health, or the climate. And climate seems to come in third a lot. And I personally don't really understand that, because if we don't have a healthy planet to live on, none of us are going to be able to live here. And I don't want to have a doomsday, you know, mindset, but I think things are pretty scary sometimes. And I'm not sure why people aren't waking up to that. Some of the, you know, the weather events that we have just on a yearly basis now. So I still talk about it in terms of climate change because I think it is a little more accessible for the everyday person rather than the animal cruelty, because I think people just, when you show them the animal cruelty, it's just a lot of times too much for them. And I think, I mean, it's heartbreaking. It still is heartbreaking. For me to see images. I just watched that new documentary on Netflix about the twin study.
Yes.
And there was an episode that had a lot of, they really tied it back to the environment and veganism to the environment and to animals. And I could barely watch that episode. It was really intense for me, especially some of the footage for the fish. So I think talking about it in terms of climate, I guess I hope that people will start to think about it in terms of what's going to happen for their kids, their grandkids. And I am a proponent that, well, for me, I'll talk to anyone about, for whatever reason I can think to connect veganism to their life. So if I think health is a doorway, I would choose to talk about in terms of health. But climate seems really important to me. We lived in California for a little while, and in our last house there, we were very close to wildfires. And so it's really close to me in thinking about what's going to be like in the future. So, you know, I wrote this in the book, but the IPCC from the UN, they've been talking about climate change, connecting climate change and our food system for years, urging people to eat more plant-based foods. And then last month, the World Health Organization started talking about that for your health and for the climate to move to a more plant-based diet. And then there's a new study out last fall that talks about the impact of a meat-based diet versus a plant-based diet in terms of reducing our greenhouse gas emissions. And a vegan diet produces 75% less greenhouse gas emissions. There's just so much evidence of how we can change. I think a lot of people just think, oh, it's just me. I'm just one person. I don't matter. But I don't believe that. I believe every single one of us matters. And so I'm going to keep talking about it in this way because it's so relevant to what we're experiencing right now in the world.
And I love what you talk about with the one person. I'm a big believer in the ripple effect that you don't know when you talk to somebody on a bus or you talk to somebody in the supermarket, you don't know how far that's going to go. And so often, I think we tend to judge whether some stranger or maybe not a stranger is potential vegan material. And I think that's so unfair. I remember in school, sometimes teachers would talk about certain students weren't college material. And I remember thinking, that is so wrong because you don't know what is in that person. That could be the person that goes out and cures some major disease or brings about peace on earth. And it's the same with the vegan thing, because I think we have the idea, well, if somebody is like me in other ways, you know, if they kind of my same sort of lifestyle and they're kind of like me and I'm a vegan, then maybe they might want to be vegan. But you know, there are a lot of vegans who aren't at all like me. And so I want to be able to, you know, open it up to everybody and let that reality that, you know, one person, I mean, anybody could sit here and just name off the top of their head 20 single human beings whose lives altered the whole course of history. And the idea that we're not going to reach out and ripple out and change more people, it's just, maybe it's a kind of lack of self-esteem running rampant in the culture that we believe that people aren't going to do something that seems hard or that seems different. But people do hard stuff all the time.
They do. This goes along with what you're saying. Sharon Gannon.
Oh, I love her. She wrote the foreword to my new book. It's like,
oh, she did. Yeah. Oh, I'm so excited for your new book. But in her book, she has a second edition, but the first edition was Vegetarianism and Yoga. And now it's been retitled to Veganism and Yoga, which I was so happy to see. But I read that book when it came out, and it's in the very back of the book. She talks about it is not our job to decide if someone's going to change. We are the messenger, and it's actually doing a disservice to that person by deciding in advance that, oh, they won't hear my story. They won't want to change. We have to leave the door open to them actually wanting to change. And so we're messengers. We give the information and let them decide. And that really changed the way I thought about things, because I think I did judge in advance. Oh, they're not going to listen to me. They don't want to hear what I have to say. And so I don't think it's always easy to have that mindset, because it is easy to know a person and think, oh, I don't think so. But it really does do them a disservice, especially when it's really important information, whether it is about veganism or, you know, talking about yoga or something. You know, someone who doesn't practice yoga that might think, oh, that's weird. But we know it's not weird. So just being able to be myself and talk about the things that matter to me with people. And I try to be a good, one of the ways I feel like I'm an activist, and this is very one-on-one, but I really do try to be like a good vegan model to show that, you know, it's enjoyable. I love my life. I love how I live. I love eating vegan. I love wearing vegan clothes. I love finding vegan shoes. This has taken me some time, but I really love living in a way that is more climate friendly. My husband is a big environmentalist, and I talk about our relationship a lot in my book because he's influenced me a lot in terms of going beyond the mindset of veganism is just for the animals, that it is, there's a bigger picture here, and veganism is good for so many reasons. It's just, you can't go wrong.
Well, I completely agree with you, and I hope that as time goes by, everybody will. My guest, listeners, is Christine Cook-Mania, and the book is Vegan Minded: Becoming a Steward for Animals, People, and the Planet. So do have a look at that. Well, since you brought up yoga and you brought up Sharon Gannon, let us talk about yoga, which is one of my favorite topics. Yoga is the reason that I went vegetarian. I had tried doing it for the animals when I was 13 and didn't make it. But later on, when I was 18, I made it to pescatarian. When I was 19, to vegetarian. And this was inspired by yoga. And it was telling me that not only do I need to do this for purposes of ahimsa, of harmlessness, of kindness to all those animals, of course, but also for my own spiritual growth, that eating and ingesting pain and fear and suffering was just going to be a really stupid thing to do if I wanted to be serious about yoga. So tell us a little bit about your story there and how you see the connection of veganism and yoga.
So I started practicing yoga in about 1996. So I'm 28 years, and I know you're a much longer practitioner than me, but I was a vegetarian then. And I think, you know, I just was practicing for a long time and I was reading books. And I think just subconsciously, I knew. It took a while to really connect all the dots. But I think that yoga, because it's such a contemplative practice and that you really quiet your mind when you're in, whether you're in a class or you're doing it at home, the whole point, this is what I take back from my asana practice, is I always focus on my breath. So it quiets my mind. It brings me to the present. So I think just doing that over and over allowed me to change. And maybe in ways that weren't necessarily conscious, but I really believe that practicing yoga is what led me to finally say, I could be vegan. And I want to be vegan because I know it's the right thing for me. I really felt that yoga, if it played a big role in just allowing me to slow down at times, because we're so busy in life, and I would be running, I'd go to work and I'd do this and blah, blah, blah. But that 1 hour that I would take to do yoga just felt so, it changed me. And so what really happened, where it most made the biggest impact for me, is when I became a yoga teacher. I was in a training from 2007 to 2008. So a while ago, and I was pretty new vegan. But I was the only vegan in my cohort, and we had to do a creative project. So I decided I was going to introduce everyone to veganism. And it was the scariest thing I've ever done. I still think it was so scary. I don't know why. But I remember I put all this material together. I got pamphlets from PETA, from Mercy for Animals, from Vegan Outreach, the physicians. Committee for Responsible Medicine, all these different things. I put them in folders for all the participants. And I was in tears, like so scared to give it to them, because I just knew, I guess I just was so afraid of their reaction, because it is a lot to give someone that information all at once. if you don't know anything about how animals are treated. I truly tried to choose different brochures and magazines that were a little gentler, but the reaction I received from everyone was, thank you. I didn't know. So that really changed it for me. And I presented it as ahimsa is the very first limb of the yoga, of the eight limbs of yoga. It's the very first thing you learn and means non-harming. And I think that veganism is part of that, that just matched up right away for me. And so that's how I've been presenting it to people ever since in the yoga world. When I teach, and every now and then it comes up that I'm vegan, and ahimsa is number one. So that's really where it came from. And I know a lot of yoga teachers are not vegan. And I just think the thing that I always heard for a long time is teachers saying, well, we have to practice ahimsa, but we got to take care of ourselves first. And so when I was writing the chapter on yoga in my book, my question to all of those teachers is, well, what if veganism is putting yourself first? What if that's what's best for you? And to your point, you'll grow spiritually from this practice.
That is so interesting, because I think in contemporary yoga in the West, even vegetarianism is just considered very optional. And I know that there are a lot of yoga people who get into the carnivore diet and the keto and the paleo and the Atkins, which are all the same thing. They just keep renaming it. And it is funny when people talk about, should we call this vegan? Maybe vegan is a loaded word. At least we don't change the name every 3 years.
That's true. It is true. And there is a little, between saying vegan or do you call it plant-based? And I go back and forth. I mean, but I've always been very clear that I'm vegan, and I feel no shame or judgment in saying that. That is something it's something I wear. It's a proud label for me because it's the way of life that I want to live, and I love it.
It's such a funny thing about the word that it seems that in commerce, it's considered very good. So I was in Marshall's of all places not long ago, and one of the tables of purses said, vegan bags. So evidently, they did some sort of demographic research that if you let people know that the bags are vegan, more people are going to pick them up and consider buying them than if you don't. But when it's a person who's saying, I am vegan, then I guess it gets to be a little bit trickier. But, it's a good word. People know what it is. I tend to have a practical streak, and I know it's taken over 70 years for people to know what the word is, 75 years now. So why would we want to throw out that long learning curve and try to get people to understand something else? So in terms of your yoga practice in the little form that you sent me, you have a very interesting question. You say, does it matter what a yogi eats? Well, I'm going to ask you that. Does it matter what a yogi eats?
I think it does. I really think someone who's really serious about yoga and the principles and the philosophy, that they're not just practicing asana at a studio, someone who really wants to learn the philosophy, I don't see how you can read the first sutra, the first limb with the yamas that mention ahimsa, and think that there's any other way. I feel that in my heart. And that's just resonates for me. But I think it matters what everybody eats, to be honest. So I do think that veganism and yoga go hand in hand. I think you don't have to practice yoga to be vegan, but I think when you're practicing yoga to incorporate veganism into your life, it makes a lot of sense.
Yes. And I think that when people are open, sometimes it does come, as you were describing some of your experiences, I was reminded of something that I heard from one of my very early teachers. And she said, don't bother changing your diet. Yoga will change your diet. Now, obviously, that doesn't happen for everybody, but I guess it happens for those whose hearts are ready. And then for other people, it's up to us to help them be more ready. So let's talk just a little bit about how you look at health and self-care. That's interesting what you said, that so many of the contemporary yoga teachers say, well, ahimsa is all well and good, but you have to have practice harmlessness towards yourself first. Something is not connecting. And I'm probably going to say this so many times on this show that people will get tired of it, but it's been such an interesting aha for me recently. I was speaking to a group of very dedicated animal people. These are people who do animal rescue, wildlife, cats and dogs, and they want to be vegan or certainly vegetarian. But in many cases, they've been told by a physician, usually, or some kind of nutritionist, that they have to eat meat for some condition that they're undergoing. So that's one situation. But then over on the other side, you've got the whole food plant-based people, many of whom have never given animals a second thought. They might not even like animals, but because they are so convinced of the scientific evidence that this is the healthiest way to live, they are no longer eating animal products and they're exercising and they're not eating processed foods and they're doing other things as well for themselves. This is how they are practicing ahimsa to themselves. Mm-hmm. And yet so many people who would love to include the animals feel that they can't. This is just making me feel like this is a road I must go down, that we must, you know, we're talking in this country so often about people can't communicate and the left and the right and all that. But how about the health vegans and the ethical vegans? I mean, we've got to get this some cross-pollination there so that these animal people will know, hey, guess what? This would be healthy even if you didn't like animals.
I know. It is. It's so tricky. There are all these divisions, and I don't mean them in like a negative way, but there's just these silos of different kinds of vegans, it seems.
Ooh,
like.
What a great phrase.
There is a little bit of that. And I have actually spent some time around some recently. We were doing some potlucks with this group that's really focused on whole foods, plant-based. And they're to me, they're really extreme. No sugar, no salt, no oil, all this stuff. And that's not the kind of vegan I am. I mean, I'm a pretty healthy vegan, but I do not turn my nose down at some good vegan cheese or a vegan burger that, you know, so I enjoy life. And so I've kind of come to a moderate position on this, but for the people who would like to be vegan, but their doctors tell them you need to eat meat for whatever, I mean, I would just be asking them, well, could I share with you some resources that maybe you could research on your own? Because doctors have very little nutrition education, and most people don't know that. I think most people think you go to the doctor and what they say, that's that. That's what I have to do. And they know all. And I don't think that's true. I think I like my doctor, but she supports my vegan diet. Is she vegan? No, but she supports it. And so I would want to find someone who would be more open to helping me do something that I want to do. Because I think being vegan can be very healthy for people. I'm not going to say it's like, you still can get diseases when you're vegan. So it's not the end all be all miracle, but I think it's a very healthy way to live if you do it in the right way. If you're eating you know, fried food every day, you can still do that as a vegan. Well, that's not very healthy. So you just learning about that. I'm big on people taking agency over their own health goals. And so listening to your doctor, of course, but, you know, being able to ask the questions, and that requires some research normally. Mm-hmm. So you know what to ask.
I agree with you so much. There was a book that came out a long time ago. I don't remember the author, but he was a medical doctor, and he had coined the phrase, the Church of Modern Medicine. Mm-hmm. And he went on with this metaphor about the various sacraments and the rituals of modern medicine. And certainly, they sometimes are life-saving. And so, you know, and the doctors and the nurses are dedicated, and they do all these wonderful things. And yet, there is a certain theology to it. And it's really about drugs and surgery. Not long ago, I bashed my knee on a coffee table, which was not my most brilliant move, but, you know, these things happen. And in speaking with one of my doctors, whom I also absolutely adore and admire, the options that were given to me were a couple of injections. And then if that doesn't work, then you can go to this doctor and he does. It's not really surgery. It's arthroscopy. Well, I had that years ago. It's surgery. And so for me, the kind of person I am, I hear all that. And it may come to that, but it's not there yet. And mm-hmm. so there's physical therapy and there's acupuncture. And, you know, certainly before jumping into the sacraments of the pharmaceutical industry, you know, I just want to try some of this other stuff first. And I think it's a little bit that way with the diet, that when you can really speak with a physician and explain where you're coming from, I think most of them really respect that, mm-hmm. unless you're in a situation where they only get, I don't know, 14.2 minutes and there's not time to listen.
Right. I agree. It's tricky in the Western medicine situation. I think the Eastern medicine, some of the modalities you just mentioned, is becoming more like common for mm-hmm. people to consider that. And I think it's good to, so that you're not, the first thing you don't do is to take a pill or get surgery if it's yeah. not necessary.
Right. And I think it gives you a more autonomy and more feeling of, okay, I did everything I could. Mm-hmm. So I think about this situation with my knee. If, you know, 6 months, 12 months from now, I am being put under sedation to have something major done, it'll be like, okay, but I really gave my all to physical therapy and I found the best acupuncturist I could. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's like so many other things. There's something about, I don't know, I'm kind of hearing Frank Sinatra singing My Way. There's a lot to be said for that. So as we go to break, I just want to share with you some of Christine's social media and where you can find her. So her website is Christine Cook Mania, and that is spelled MANIA.com. And just about everywhere else, she is Vegan Girl Next Door. So go to Facebook, go to Instagram, and just check out Vegan Girl Next Door, and you will find the author of this beautiful book, Vegan Minded. So now let's breathe for a minute, and we'll be back. And we're going to talk, Christine, about creativity, about writing a book, and what that's all about for those who are maybe thinking, there might be a book in me. You know what? There very well might be.
Are you looking for a new and empowering lens through which to view your life and your health? Then register now for Get Healthy with Sound, a weekend workshop with Eileen McCusick, an innovator in the fields of therapeutic sound, electric health, and the human biofield, May 24th to 26th at Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York. Learn easy and accessible techniques to reduce stress, improve focus, and increase energy. Learn more today at eomega.org/thrive.
Welcome back to the Main Street Vegan Program. And if you're new, oh gosh, thank you. Thank you for being here. And if you've been listening for a long time, oh boy, I appreciate you a lot. You know, we started doing this program back in 2012. And if you're somebody who likes historicity, just scroll back in the archives and see what you can find. And I'll also let you in on a few other things that are going on in the world of Main Street Vegan. I run a program called Main Street Vegan Academy, which has been training and certifying vegan lifestyle coaches, educators, and entrepreneurs for the past 12 years. You can check that out at mainstreetvegan.com. And I mentioned earlier that while we do this podcast is audio, so you can be on your treadmill or driving your car and listen. I also do a live stream, which is video. So to kind of get some TV on, do check out unchainedtv.com or the Unchained TV app. This comes from noted broadcaster Jane Velez Mitchell, and it's just so cool. It is an animal rights network. So I do a show there called Main Street Vegan Salon, and that's in person. We do it in a studio in Manhattan. It's so much fun. It makes me think, oh, this is why I moved to New York City, to do something fun like this. But also on Unchained TV, there's just so much. There's even a show now. One of the vegan Kardashians has a cooking show, and there's all kinds of animal rights news and just wonderful stuff. So do check that out. And then I want to announce something that is just so cool. And I can brag about it all day long because it was actually the brainchild of my husband, not me, William Melton. And he actually hadn't been vegan very long when he came up with the idea for a feature film, a family feature film that would appeal to regular people all across America, people who are not looking at anything vegan or anything animal rights, but just a nice film that the whole family could enjoy together. And it's called Miss Liberty. So we are in development with Miss Liberty, and I would just love it to pieces if you would visit her website and see what's going on there. And maybe you could sign up for the mailing list, so as things start to happen, you can be in on that from the very beginning. And that website is MissLibertyTheMovie.com. And we'll put all these in the show notes at mainstreetvegan.com, along with all of the social media and other info for Christine Cook Mania and her wonderful book, Vegan Minded, Becoming a Steward for Animals, People, and the Planet. And speaking of books, before they're out there, somebody has to write them. So talk to us about your experience writing your very first book.
It was 3 years it took. it was a process. I had started on a book probably back in 2008. I remember going to a cafe. I was living in Chicago, working downtown. After work one night, I went to a cafe, brought my laptop, and I was like, I'm going to start a book. I had this in my head for a long time. I just always had wanted to write a book, and I worked on it on and off for years, but it wasn't until the pandemic that I went back to grad school and was studying humane education. During the first semester, I asked my mentor, because we were talking about capstone projects, something we'd be working on for the next 2 years. And I looked at her naively on Zoom and said, could I write a book? And she's like, oh, sure she could. Sure you can. I had no idea what I was getting myself into in terms of the amount of effort it would require to write a book. But this book was a joy for me, and it really came, every word came from my heart. And that might sound a little cliche, but it truly did. It's I really wanted to write a memoir. And I went back and forth with one of my teachers for the 2 years. She's like, but is it really a memoir? And I had to decide that it really wasn't. It's a book of personal essays. I like to call it a memoir in essays because there's a lot of personal stories in there, but it's also has a lot of information that I wanted to share with people that I gained through studying humane education. But this, the creative project, I loved having this big project. I used to be a project manager in the corporate world. And so this was like, this is just like the perfect project for me. I could outline the book, and there's just so much creativity in writing a book, from what are you going to title each chapter to actually writing all the words. And I think about this in terms of this big project, and I loved it. And the thing that I chose to do, I did not even really try to find a traditional publisher, because I had also been looking for a job at the same time, and I was getting a lot of rejection letters, and I was like, okay, I can only handle rejection in maybe one area of life at a time. And I really wanted to have agency over the whole project. I wanted to be in charge. And so I decided to self-publish. And I just think, from a creative perspective, that was the right decision for me, because I got to decide everything, from working with the cover artist to how am I going to publish this? Am I going to just use Amazon, or am I going to use Ingram Sparks to get it all out there? Where am I going to do this? And then marketing it. So it's been such a pleasure to do this work. And I really think that if someone wanted to write a book, that they should do it. Number one, don't put it off, because there's never going to be a good time to do it. So you just start. And I just think we need more vegans to do creative things in the world, to have the message out there as many places as possible. So I love this, and I, you know, have some ideas for future projects, but I just hope that people will read it and then think, oh, I have something to say too in some way. It might be a painting, it might be a podcast, it might be a book, but I'm encouraging people to use their creativity.
I think that veganism creativity connection is getting a lot more play in recent years. And it is cool to see all of the things that people are doing with film and photography. And, you know, there's just no end to it.
And vegans are creative. I mean, look at the food they're making, you know, that we make, you know, the, you know, non-dairy cheeses, and just things, the way we use mushrooms now, just so many things. That's one of the things I love about being vegan, is it's such a creative way to live.
I love that. I was just thinking of people on a date, and one of them looking into the other's eyes and saying, you're so creative in the way you use mushrooms.
It's true.
That's fun. And to me, there's just something so kind of pregnant about writing a book. And I loved being pregnant. I only have one child, so I only had that experience once in my life. But it was so much, there is something coming. It was kind of like, you know, Christmas and your birthday and a big vacation and a graduation, you all kind of wrapped up into one. And writing a book is like that, that, you know, that you put so much into it, and then it goes out into the world and you don't know where it could go. You don't know whose hands it's going to get into. So it's pretty magical. And I certainly hope that your book gets into lots and lots of hands of pre-vegans, pregans, because I think very often we're talking to one another. And that's good too, because we don't want to have recidivism. We want to support vegans and activists in that. But I just feel like your book is so friendly that it just really really needs to get into the hands of all kinds of people. So as we're winding this down, I know that you have a kind of fourth pillar of veganism. So tell us about that.
Sure. So when for many years, I thought, well, there's three pillars of being vegan: animals, human health, and the environment. And I came to the environment later. So at first, it was just animals, and then it was human health, and then the environment, and that's the order. But while I was in grad school, it was during the pandemic, times were weird, and it just came to me because I really needed community at that time. You know, we were living in the country at the time, very isolated already, and then the pandemic happens. And so with what came to me as the fourth pillar, and I think this is super important, is community. That we cannot do this alone, and we don't need to do this alone, and that it is really important to surround ourselves by other like-minded people, and then invite others in. We're always inviting the non-vegans. And I, right now where I live, my husband and I are the only vegans in our neighborhood community. And so we're always bringing vegan food to our gatherings, and they bring vegan food for me because it started to be this, you know, we support each other. But community is really important for vegans. And this past summer, you know, things are kind of getting back to normal. They're, you know, more normal now. And so I started having potlucks in our area. We met at a park there's a vegan Facebook group. There's almost a vegan Facebook group in every town. And if every town is not doing potlucks, I really think they should be. I know it seems like it's very hippie, but it's just an easy way to get to know other people. And you can include non-vegans that's a way to introduce them to vegan food. And the other benefit is that it's a really great way to try new recipes and new dishes that, you know, I wouldn't necessarily know about. I just think it builds a stronger community in your town. And it's just so important to be with other people.
I love that idea of community. I think to be with other vegans, certainly, especially if we're feeling kind of set off from other folks, but also to be around non-vegans and be nice, because yeah. I think a lot of people are afraid of vegans. They think that we're going to get them in a corner and proselytize and tell them, you know, terrible things about themselves. They forget that in almost every case, we weren't always vegan either. And right. So, you know, we just share where we're coming from, and they're going to take as much as they can handle today. And hopefully right. It's quite a bit.
It is. Vegans are nice people. And I think that's the one thing that I've learned along the journey. You know, it took me a long time to become vegan before, when I learned about all the issues many years before I decided to be vegan. And that was a lesson in it for myself, because I became vegan at a time where I felt like there was a lot of judging each other. I don't know that I feel that way now, or maybe it's just that I'm like taking myself out of that realm of or that situation, but everyone has their own journey. And kind of going back to what I mentioned that Sharon Gannon had said in her book, is that be open to the idea that other people are going to want to join us.
Yes. So I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Christine. And one way that a lot of people are going to want to join us is by reading Vegan Minded. So everybody do take a look at that. And we will put a link so that you can get your very own copy there on the show notes at mainstreetvegan.com. Thank you so much for being my guest, Christine. And thank you, everybody who's listened, for spending this time with us. And now, let's go out and make Main Street vegan.
Thank you, Victoria.
Thanks for listening. Find out more about today's episode at MainStreetVegan.com, where you can also learn how to take your vegan or plant-based outreach to the professional level through Main Street Vegan Academy, and join our inner circle at the Main Street Vegan Podcast Listeners Group on Facebook. See you next time.
I'm Laura Worcester, host of the Intuitive Life Podcast. As an intuitive medium and teacher working with the world of spirit, I love to share the peace that comes with the awareness that our departed loved ones are still with us. And I also love to help people explore what it means to live an intuitively led life. Start listening now on mindbodyspirit.fm or wherever you get your podcasts.